All right, let's take our Bibles and turn back to the book of Judges, chapter 19 again. Judges, chapter 19. And while you're turning, let me remind you that if you purchase one of these poinsettias in memory or in honor of someone, you may get yours tonight. If you didn't get it Sunday night, you may get it tonight. They're going to be gone Sunday night. They'll be gone. So if you purchase one, you better get it, because I'm going to give them away. This Sunday night. All right. Don't want them freeze to death. How many of you are still cold? Still cold? Are you really? Well, y'all move over here. Y'all move over. No. That's your seat. You're hot. Oh, my soul. I'm numb. That's what I am. I'm numb. My hands won't even work. So we were talking out in the hallway. How many of you know what long handles are? You know what long handles are? All the old folks. Yeah, all the old folks know what long handles are. All right, I'm not going to tell you. Go check it out. Huh? That's bad, isn't it? Yeah. But years ago, I can remember when growing up down in West Virginia, up Campbell's Creek there, just Cold Fork Collar. My grandfather lived as far up Cold Fork Collar as you could get. When you got to his house, you were on top of the mountain. That was it. You just couldn't go any further. And he had two rooms in the house, two rooms. The insulation was newspaper. Wadded up newspaper. I kid you not. It was wadded up newspaper. That was the insulation. And it was just a slab floor with linoleum on top of it. And he had two rooms. And there was a wood-burning stove in the kitchen. And there was a pot-bellied stove in the living room / den / bedroom / library. All right? A pot-bellied stove. That was it, and we had. There was no heat other than that. Than those stoves. That was it, and so we would take the wheelbarrow and go across the creek on a footbridge, and then you turn left and went up the creek about 100 yards, and there was the side of the mountain, and there was a coal seam on sticking out of the mountain. And we would take a pickaxe and hit that coal and knock it loose in great big chunks like this. And then we would pick those chunks up and lay them in the wheelbarrow and then wheel it back to the house. And I remember the first time that my grandfather let me wheel it by myself, and I spilled it. And he laughed till he cried. He just laughed till he cried. He said, "See, I told you, you weren't man enough yet to push that wheelbarrow." And so from then on, it was a contest to see whether I could do it. And I finally could do it. But we would wheel that wheelbarrow back to the house. And that was, we would feed that stove all night long. He would get up and feed that stove all night long just to keep the house warm. And about 5 o'clock in the morning, you wake up just shivering. I mean, it bone cold in there. Nights like this make me think of that. And those were the good old days, weren't they? But my grandfather had what he called, when it got cold like that, he pulled out the long-handled long johns is what he called them. All right. And it's a one-piece long john. You didn't put the shirt on and in the pants. No, it was all one set. Well, it was all connected, and it buttoned up in the front. I can still see him in the shadow getting up to stoke that stove, and the right around the bottom of that thing would just glow red in the night. It would just glow red. That's how you. I don't think it would have passed OSHA standards. I really don't think it would have. I don't think the state of Maryland would have put their approval on that stove. But I remember those days. My, my, my. makes you thank the good Lord for central air and heat, doesn't it? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right. Well, let's begin. Okay. I tell you what, let's pray before we start. Our Father, we ask now your blessings upon us. And how we thank you for the Bible. I pray you'll bless this to our hearts tonight. And just help us to glean and to learn and to understand this passage of Scripture. I pray that our minds and our hearts will be receptive and responsive to what you have for us tonight. And so guide and direct us now, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, we are looking at the last several chapters in the book of Judges. And the reason we are looking at these is for the last several months we have, you have been sending me questions that you have out of the Bible. And somebody sent a question asking, can I explain chapter 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21 from the book of Judges? And so that's what we've been doing. We've been looking at this period in Israel's history, and it was a dark period. It was not a good time for Israel. Even though they were just one generation beyond Moses. All right, so just a generation to a generation and a half out of Moses and Joshua. And the great victories that were won when they came into the land. And I mean, just think about it. They saw the sun stand still. Think about that. They saw God deliver Jericho into their hands. They saw mighty miracles. They saw God do amazing things. And yet so quickly they compromise. So quickly. And I have divided this into a couple of different areas. We looked, first of all, at the religious apostasy out of chapter 17. And we saw that apostasy is when you go away from the truth. It is going away from the truth of God. And the whole section of 17 through 21 can be described with verse 6 of chapter 17. Here was their problem. And the problem was in those days, in other words, in the days of the judges, there was no king in Israel, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Now, I explained to you that God never called Moses a king, and God never called Joshua a king. God was to be their king, but they had thrown God off the throne, and when you throw God off the throne, you normally put yourself on the throne, and that's what they did, and in those days, there was no king in Israel. But every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And folks, that's where we are today in our country. This is exactly where we are today. Israel was set up as a theocracy. The idea was that God was to be their king. God would lead them and guide them. We saw that with Joshua and the book of Joshua. We saw God telling Joshua what to do and when to do it and how to do it. And when he obeyed the Lord, then God blessed. But then they got over into the period of the judges, and they decided that they could do a better job running the country than God could, and so they got rid of God, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. All right, so we saw that religious apostasy, and then in chapter 18 we noticed that that anarchy began to set in. And that's what happens when you get this religious apostasy going, and every man does that which is right in his own eyes. Well, what happens then is that you just get all kinds of mess going on. What happened in chapter 18 was the people of Dan. They, and again, we're reminded in verse 1 of chapter 18, in those days there was no king in Israel. All right, so notice that. And then this Levite comes out, and he is hired by the Danites. So now the people of Dan, they don't have to go down to Bethel, or they don't have to go down where down where the tabernacle is. They can just do their own thing in their own city. It was a convenience religion. And so they hired their own priest, and they had their own religious garb and the whole nine yards to go with it. All right. So then in chapter 30, the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, and I showed you that Gershom was Moses' son. All right. So we're just one generation out. And one generation out, apostasy hits. And when apostasy hits, you get this anything goes philosophy. You get this que sera, sera, whatever will be philosophy. It's a religion of convenience. And so the children of Dan set up this image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, became the priest. They were priests until the captivity came. And so once that religious apostasy sets in, I guess it's pretty hard to get rid of, would you not say? Yes, indeed, because it stayed that way for a long, long time. All right, then in chapter 19, we started last week looking at the fact that chapter 19 brought about this severe state of anarchy in the land. Now, folks, listen. When you get religious apostasy, and then you get moral apostasy, you then will see that follow with anarchy. It always works that way. And we have seen anarchy in our society, in our world, many, many times through the centuries. Let me remind you that just in the last century, we saw what happens when you have anarchy. You say, what are you talking about? I'm talking about Hitler and World War II. I'm talking about 6 to 7 million Jews killed at the hands of anarchists. I'm talking about millions of people that die whenever that kind of thing happens. And so when every man does that which is right in his own eyes, then this is what you get. You see, Adolf Hitler thought that the Jews should be exterminated. Well, where do you get that? Well, he did that which was right in his own eyes. He got that philosophy not from the Bible, not from God. He got that Bible, got that philosophy from the devil himself. And so millions die when that stuff happens. And you have seen it throughout history. Whenever there is anarchy, whenever anarchy rules, people die. And that's just the way it is. And so here we are in Judges 18 to 21. There was no king in Israel, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Folks, that is an awful, awful place for any society to find itself. Now, we saw in the two in the two previous chapters, 17 and 18, that that this anarchy begins when it starts when people apostatize and go away from the truth. Now, from there, it moves to a complete and total collapse and breakdown in morals. Now, does that not sound familiar? Man, it does. Our nation has, in the last 100 years, experienced an onslaught of religious apostasy. We have watched the churches in America go through such dramatic transformation that it is shocking what has gone on. This last fall, I was preaching in a conference, I think with Dr. Smith, in a sword conference with Dr. Smith, and it was down in North Florida, and there was a missionary there, and he and I sat across from a table from each other and started to converse. And he told me he and I were about the same age, and I started asking him where he was from, and he started telling me his story, and he said that for many years he and his family were missionaries in a remote village and a remote town in Russia, His children were all grown now and gone. And then he said that his wife passed away. And he said that he just stayed in this village for many years without coming home. He said, "I just stayed there." And I said, "Well, what brings you home?" And he said, "Well, my support has just all but dried up. And so my mission board told me that I had better come home and try to raise some support, or they were going to have to insist that I leave the field and just come back to the States." So he said that he did his best when he was on the field to stay in contact with his supporting churches, but all of his churches had just about dwindled down to nothing. So he said he came home just to see what was happening. Now, mind you, this fella is a fundamental, independent Baptist missionary who spent, he said, 3 years raising support from independent Baptist, fundamental, Bible-believing Baptist churches about 18, 20 years ago. And he said that when he came home to visit his supporting churches, he said, "First of all, I couldn't get anybody to answer the phone at any of the churches that I called. Nobody would pick up a telephone." And I smiled and I said, "Yeah, you need their email addresses, or you need the pastor's cell phone number. Or you need to just hang out on Bookface for a while and you'll find you can be able to talk to them all on Bookface." And he said, "Yeah, I learned that." And he said, "My problem is I don't know anything about Facebook or Instagram or any of the rest of them." And so I said, "Well, how'd you get a hold of them?" And he said, "Well," he said, I eventually just decided I was going to go and visit my churches." He said they were all basically in the North Florida, Southern Georgia area. And so I just decided I would just go visit my supporting churches. He said I had a list of them. I knew who they were. I knew where they were. And many of them were in the Atlanta metro area. And so he said I just took off to go and visit, since none of them would pick up the telephone. And so I said, "Well, how'd it go?" And he said, well over half of them, when I went there, they were either not in existence today or were full-blown contemporary, and I could hear the jam session going on as I approached the building. And I said, really? He said, yes. He said, I walked in and the sound and the lights just blasted me. And I just turned around and walked back out. And I said, well, what about the others? And he said, well, the others had dwindled down to practically nothing. And I really could not believe what had happened to all these once vibrant, excited, soul winning, bus running, visitation going churches that I used to get my support from. He said, it's no wonder that I don't have the support anymore. The churches aren't even there anymore. Folks, these are independent Baptist churches. And this is in the Bible Belt. And this is what we're hearing from missionaries all over the place. They're having to come home because churches in America can no longer support missions. You know why they can't support missions? They can't support themselves. Do you know why they can't support themselves? Because millennials don't like being told they need to tithe. Millennials don't like that. I mean, you know, you can't tithe when you live in mommy's garage. You know what I'm saying? You can't tithe when you don't have a job. And it's just amazing. I mean, that's where we are. And this religious apostasy creates a moral apostasy. And it becomes in full display. And folks, notice where this happened. Judges 17, 18, and 19. The tribe of Dan, the one to the north. Can I remind you? Dan was the first of the tribes to go into idolatry. And Benjamin, I'm going to show you in just a few minutes what happened to them. But Benjamin, their moral weakness is so disgusting and so horrendous that it actually caused a civil war to break out between the tribes here in this passage. So think about it. All the other tribes turned on Benjamin here, and we're going to see that in just a minute, with the intent of destroying their cousins, their own blood relation. You say, well, what in the world would have happened? Well, I'll show you here in just a minute. But the idea is that this religious apostasy leads to a moral breakdown, and that leads to compromise and apathy, and that leads to just a moral apostasy that sweeps the land, and problems are abounding. So let's see what happened here. All right, now, last week we looked at this Levite. You remember that? Remember last week in chapter 20, the Levite? All right, so chapter 19, the Levite, and he comes into the town with his concubine. Remember that? All right, she left him according to verse 2 of chapter 19. His concubine played the whore against him. All right, and you say, well, why'd she do that? Because that's what she was. She is not a nice person, all right? And so he came following after her, and she's at her dad's house. She evidently missed some folks back where she grew up, and so she went back to her dad's house. And so finally, the Levite leaves. Look at verse 13. It says, and he said unto his servant, come and let us draw near to one of these places to lodge all night in Gibeah or Ramah. And they passed on and went their way, and the sun went down upon them when they were by Gibeah, which belonged to who? Benjamin. All right, Benjamin. Now remember, Benjamin, we're talking about the tribe of Benjamin. They're going to play a key role here. All right, so what happened? Well, if you look at verse 20, he ran into an old man. Nobody would invite him in. And so this old man said, "Peace be with thee." He said, what are you doing out here? Don't you have a place to stay?" And he said, "No, I don't have a place to stay." And so the old man said, "Well, come, you stay with me." So he took him, the Levite, the priest, he took him in. All right, so verse 23, now they were making, as they were making their hearts merry. So what are they doing? They're getting drunk. You say, "Wait a minute, he's a Levite." I know. But there was no king in the land, and everybody did that which is right in their own eyes. You say, "Well, what's wrong with drinking?" Well, right here, it's called a Bible. You say, "Well, but everybody does it." Bible. Let's stick with it, not what everybody else says. You see, there was no king in the land, so everybody did that which was right in their own eyes. If God is your king, then you follow what the book says. And the book is against you drinking. You say, "Show me. I don't have time tonight," but I've done that before. It's there. Trust me. Strong drink is raging. Don't do it. All right. So what happened? Well, they're in this house, and look at verse 22. It says they were making their hearts merry. Behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial. Belial is the devil. Beset the house round about and beat at the door and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, "Bring forth the man that came into thine house that we may know him." Perverts. Perverts. Plain and simple. Sounds like Sodom and Gomorrah, doesn't it? And the man, the master of the house, said, "No, this is not right. Don't do this wickedness." Look at verse 23. He said in the middle of the verse, "Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man is come into mine house. Do not this folly, this foolishness." How sad. So what happened? Well, the verse 25, the men would not hearken to him. So the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her and abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was till it was light. What happened to her? Verse 27, 28, she died. She died. They killed her. She died at their hands. Isn't that brutal? It's just disgusting. All right, so verse 29, talk about disgusting. And when he was come into the house, he took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces and sent her into all the coast of Israel. So he sent this woman into 12 parts into the 12 tribes. Now what happened? Well, it angered the 12 tribes. Look at chapter 20. Then all the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man from Dan, even to Beersheba, from the north to the south, with the land of Gilead unto the Lord in Mizpah. And the chief of all the people, even of all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 footmen that drew sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel were gone up to Mizpah. Then said the children of Israel, "Tell us, how was this wickedness?" In other words, the tribes came together and they said to the Levite, "What in the world happened here? Tell us, why did you send us this package? What happened here? Tell us." And so in verse 4, the Levite, the husband of the woman that was slain, answered and said, and so he tells them what had happened. And in verse 7, behold, ye are all children of Israel. Give here your advice and counsel. Watch. And all the people arose as one man, saying, we will not any of us go to his tent, neither will we any of us turn into his house. But now this shall be the thing which we do to Gibeah. We will go up by lot against it, and we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 of 1,000, and 1,000 of 10,000 to fetch victual for the people, that they may do when they come to Gibeah of Benjamin, according to all the folly that they have wrought in Israel. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, knit together as one man. And the tribes of Israel sent men throughout the tribe of Benjamin, saying, what wickedness is this that is done among you? Now therefore deliver us the men, the children of Belial, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and put away evil from Israel. But the children of Benjamin would, what's the next word? Not. The men of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. You ever hear of that sanctuary city thing? You ever hear that? You ever hear of that Kate Steinlin? You ever hear that? You remember that little girl got killed out in San Francisco, and they tried the man that killed her, and the jurors let him go, even though he was guilty, and they knew he was guilty, and everybody knew he was guilty, and 12 of his peers said, he didn't mean to do it. No big whoop. And that's what these children of Benjamin, they said, no, we're not going to turn over the men that killed that girl, that concubine. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. And so what happened? Well, what happened was a civil war broke out. The 11 went back to their rest of the tribes. They all got the representatives. They went back and they told everybody what was going on. Now I want you to notice something here. I want you to notice something here. Look at verse 14. It says, "And the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together out of the cities unto Gibeah." So all of Benjamin came to Gibeah, to the which were numbered 700 chosen men. Among all this people, there were 700 chosen men, left-handed. Every one could sling stones at an hair breadth and not miss. People say, "Oh, Goliath! David, he took five smooth stones in case he missed." No. No, David sat on the backside of the desert all day long and slung stones with that sling. Slung stones with the sling. Say that five times real fast. And he wasn't going to miss. I preached a sermon just a few months ago, the fact that Goliath had four brothers. Remember? He was afraid he was going to miss. No, he figured, if I kill old big boy, I'm going to have to kill his brothers too. That's the way it used to be when we were growing up. If you fought my brother, you fought me. When we were growing up, if you fought me, my brother would run. But if you fought my brother, you fought me. That's just the way it was. And that's what David thought. If I kill Goliath, I'm going to have to kill his brothers too. And there were four of them. He had five stones, one for each one. He wasn't going to miss. And here were 700 men in Benjamin, in the tribe of Benjamin, that were so accurate, they could sling a stone at a hair and split that hair. They would not miss. And the men of Israel, beside Benjamin, were numbered 400,000 men that drew sword. All these were men of war. And the children of Israel arose and went to the house of God and asked counsel of God and said, which of us shall go up first to battle against the children of Benjamin? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up first. And the children of Israel rose up in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in array to fight against them at Gibeah. And the children of Benjamin came forth out of Gibeah and destroyed down to the ground of the Israelites that day 22,000 men. So they were pretty good fighters, wouldn't you think? Pretty good fighters. And the people of verse 22, the men of Israel encouraged themselves and set their battle again in array in the place where they put themselves in array the first day. And the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until even, and asked counsel, saying, shall I go up to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother? And the Lord said, go up against him. Children of Israel came near against the children of Benjamin the second day, and Benjamin went forth against them out of Gibeah the second day and destroyed down to the ground the children of Israel again, 18,000 men. So these Benjamites could fight. They had a big army, and they could fight. All right? Read on. Then the children of Israel, verse 26, and all the people went up, came to the house of God, and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until even and burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And the children of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron. So we're one generation out. Do you see this? You say, how could it get so bad so fast? Folks, listen, I told you last week, every church is one generation away from apostasy. Every church, one generation away from apostasy. I told you last week, if the Lord tarries, I'm getting older. I'm not going to be here forever. One of these days, I'm going to die or I'm going to retire. One of these days. Not anytime soon, I hope, but one of these days. And if that day comes and you go out here and get some knucklehead and bring him in here because he looks good or he sounds good and don't get God in on the decision and don't get somebody in here that the church has met and prayed over, and get the man that God wants you to have, who believes the book and preaches the truth and stands firm. Listen, this church will not survive. It just won't do it. Every church is one generation away. So here is Phinehas, who was the son of Eleazar, who was the son of Aaron, the first high priest, saying, shall I yet go out again to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease? And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into thine hand. And Israel set liars, that's not liars with an A, all right, that's not falsehood. You know what a liar is? L-I-E-R-S. You know what are they? Huh? They're lying in wait. All right. The surprise, the element of surprise. Okay, so they were not liars in West Virginia, Lars. All right, not Lars in West Virginia. All right, liars. They were lying in wait round about Gibeah. And the children, verse 30, children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day and put themselves in array against Gibeah as at other times. And the children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city. And they began to smite the people and kill as at other times in the highways, of which one goeth up to the house of God and the other to Gibeah in the field, about 30,000 men of Israel. And the children of Benjamin said, they are smitten down before us as at the first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee and draw them from the city unto the highways. And all the men of Israel rose up out of their place and put themselves in array against Baal Tamar. And the liars, E-R-S, in wait of Israel came forth out of their places. In other words, they came jumping out of the bushes and out of hiding, even out of the meadows of Gibeah. And there came against Gibeah 10,000 chosen men out of Israel. Wow. That'd be a healthy army, wouldn't it? And the battle was sore, and they knew not the evil, that evil was near them. And the Lord smote Benjamin. Who did? Who gives the victory? Oh my, oh that we would learn that. And the Lord smote Benjamin. And the children of Israel destroyed of the Benjamites that day 25,000 and 100 men. All these drew the sword. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were smitten, for the men of Israel gave place to the Benjamites because they trusted unto the liars in wait, which they had set, beside Gibeah. So what happened was, destroyed all these Benjamites. All right, so the country had fallen into this state of apostasy, and so they said, we're not going to put up with this. And so they went, said, turn them over. Said, nope, we're not going to do it. So they decided they would fight and take care of things themselves. And folks, listen, in this 20th chapter, following religious apostasy, then following this moral awfulness, the next step in the downward progression in the life of the nation of Israel and of every nation is political anarchy. And that is what is revealed in these last two chapters of the book. If you look at the reaction of the other tribes, they said this kind of behavior cannot be tolerated. You see, the 11 believed that the laws should be enforced. And in that respect, thank God that they took a stand. But folks, I'm going to tell you, there are some things that have me greatly concerned about our country. And one of the things that has me greatly concerned about our country is that, at least to date, I hope this is not the case, and I'm hearing that when Congress comes back, that there's going to be some things that change. And I hope that's true. But there's one thing that for the last year has just grated on me, and I fear for our country if something is not done. And that thing that causes me fear is the fact that there seems to be in this land one set of moral code for the Clintons and the Democrats and another set for the rest of the country. Now that bothers me. Now I keep hearing that justice is coming. I hope that's true. And I have written several letters and made several phone calls that I hope contributed to the cause. But I keep hearing that there is a day of reckoning coming for Hillary and Bill and Obama and Kerry and Eric Holder and Humaduma and all the rest of them. Now, I don't know Samantha Powers and all the rest. They lied. And everybody knows that they lied. Where's the justice? Yeah, it better. Because if it doesn't, we're going to end up right here. Right here. And there's going to be another civil war in America if something is not done. My point is, folks, that as bad as this apostasy was, in my opinion, it's not as bad as the apostasy that's going on today in our country. I think so. And so the other tribes gave Benjamin an opportunity to deliver up the offenders, the perverts from Gibeah, and they would not do it. They would not do it. And instead, the men of Benjamin declared war against the 11 tribes. So the other 11 tribes all assembled together and came against Benjamin. Folks, I'm telling you, this is exactly where we are in our country today. There are a lot of people that are not at all happy with what Hillary and Obama and Kerry and the rest of those criminals got away with in the last 8 years. All right, so that's chapter 20. All right, now, what was the end result? Well, the end result was a lot of people died. That's the end result. All right, now, look at verse 39. When the men of Israel retired in the battle, Benjamin began to smite and kill the men of Israel, about 30 persons, for they said, "Surely they are smitten down before us as in the first battle." But when the flame began to arise out of the city with a pillar of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and behold, the flame of the city ascended up to heaven. And when the men of Israel turned again, the men of Benjamin were amazed, for they saw that evil was come upon them. Man, they got it. They got it. God certainly delivered them into their hands. Therefore, they turned, verse 42, their backs before the men of Israel unto the way of the wilderness. But the battle overtook them, and them which came out of the cities they destroyed in the midst. Thus they enclosed the Benjamites round about and chased them and trode them down with ease. And there fell, verse 44, of Benjamin 18,000 men. All these were men of valor. And they turned and fled. Man, so in other words, God certainly did deliver them, did he not? God certainly did deliver them. All right, well, we're out of time. I was wanting to get that last part. What happened? Well, they had a bunch of men killed. And these were men of valor. Did you catch that part? Verse 44. So what happened? Well, in the next chapter, here's what happened. The women of Benjamin, whose husbands had all just got killed, they came to the leaders of Israel and they said, "We got a problem here." And they said, "Well, what's your problem?" And said, "Well, all our menfolk are dead." And the leaders of Israel said, "Well, they're not all dead." And they said, "You still got a lot of men in the tribe of Benjamin." And they said, "Yeah, but there's a lot of men, but they don't like women." And so here's what they did. They took them up to the Valley of the Dancers, this little spot in Israel up just above Bethel. They took them up there, and they had all the women from Benjamin stand who lost all their husbands. And they had all the single men in all the other 11 tribes come walking by. And when they came walking by, the ladies said, "I'll take that one." They didn't marry out of love. They married out of preserving the tribe. You say, "Well, why didn't they marry Benjamites?" Because they were homosexuals. That's why Benjamin, you see the maps, and here's Judah, and Judah always protected Benjamin. Always. Remember when Joseph sent his brothers back to get Benjamin? And Jacob said to Judah, you bring your brother home. You bring Benjamin home. You remember that? And Judah swore to his daddy, I'll bring him home. Judah is always watching over Benjamin, always. And so when you look at a map and you see the tribes, here's Judah, and there's Jerusalem, and there's Judah, and right under here on the south is little Benjamin, the runt tribe. Runt, R-U-N-T, runt tribe, small. Small because the numbers are small. Why were the numbers small? Well, number one, because they lost a lot of men right here. And then when they lost those men, a lot of them were homosexuals, and homosexuals do not reproduce. And I told you last week, some of you were shocked, you were amazed, but it's true. That one of percentage wise, Israel is just a little higher than most countries with sodomites. Seriously. They're everywhere. They're a whole, it's like, you know, you go out to San Francisco and you see them out there. Well, there are certain cities in Israel. And when we were there this last fall, we didn't go to any of those cities, Steve. We didn't go to any of those places. But there's one place where in Tiberias, and you saw the lights up on the hill. Could have taken you up there. You'd have seen them everywhere. Everywhere. And they don't reproduce. All right? So that's why. So they took the single men from the other tribes and they gave them to the women of the Benjamites just to keep the tribe from disappearing. Just to keep the tribe from disappearing. You see, how'd that work? Not very good. Didn't work very well. Didn't work very well. And the book ends up, how's it end? Look at verse 25 of chapter 21. Verse 25. We're reminded, in those days there was no king in Israel, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Folks, that's anarchy. And that's... We're that far from it right here in America. Right here in America. They hate Trump with a passion. You know why? You know why? Because he stands in the way of them doing that which is right in their own eyes. They hate him. They want him impeached beyond anything else. And I'm telling you, it's, they hate him. And they hate you. And they hate me. That's all right. I really don't care. All right, you got all that? All right, there'll be a test next week. I ought to give you a quiz. I ought to. You can't use notes. No notes, no. Were you allowed to use notes in school? No. Could you open your textbook during a test? No. I ought to. All right. Well, anyway, that's Judges 19 through 21. Can I explain it? Yep. Can you understand what I explain? That's up to you, but I can explain it. Whether you get it or not, I don't know. But it's awesome, isn't it? And so applicable to today. You can make so many parallels to today. Just amazing.